Traveling the world, searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, racing fans, Steve Wolf here for the International Equine Network. And with me, of course, the IEN's founder and my co-host, Scott Miller. Scott, how's it going today?
It's going good, Steve. It could be a lot worse, but it's going good. How's it going for you? I know you've been under a lot of stress there in the last few days trying to get all these articles out on harness life.
Yeah, I've actually have been busy working for Olympia of Palm Beach Training Center. Yesterday we had 5 qualifying races, which were pretty good. And we actually had some interesting drone people come out today, so that when the videos come out later, they'll not only have the races and the calls, but they'll also be interjected with the drone shots as we're trying to prepare to make Olympia of Palm Beach quite the place to hold races. It's a 5/8 mile track, which is ideal. You can actually watch the races without binoculars, and we're just trying to help keep horses a little bit active for those that want to. Hopefully soon we're going to be able to have some 2-year-old races, the baby races as they call them. Only, you know, we restrict the time. They can only go in 2:25 because we don't want anyone to get, you know, super stretched out since they're not really racing for anything but education. But these horses need to get behind the starting gate. They need to race, learn to race with company, and because we know that things are going to end eventually and the tracks are going to be reopened, the season harness racing, thoroughbred racing, quarter horse racing has all been stopped throughout North America. And but eventually we're going to come back. And when we do, the stakes races and the season will be changed, and race dates, you know, if we've never had this happen before since World War II. But I think it's all going to work out for the best.
Oh, I do too. And what I like about what Sam and Olympia is doing down there and what you guys did there, we've got 1,100 horses here in our facility in the 3 farms. And I'm talking to the trainers today, both thoroughbreds and, you know, show horses and standardbreds. And their game plan is June the 1st. They're going to make a decision June 1st of what they're going to do, where they're going to go, because then we'll have kind of a grip on, you know, what tracks are opening and what aren't, you know, that type of thing. And so it sounds kind of exciting. They're just delayed a little bit. They're not missing any training. Even our show horse people are kind of enjoying, you know, the extra time they have here with us to prepare for whenever, you know, everything opens back up. You know, so we're kind of excited about that. You know, and I'm glad to see Olympia doing what they're doing, because you got to keep these horses, you know, it's somewhat at a ready-to-go level.
No, and that's what it's all about. In other words, and we had asked about any 2-year-olds, and although none entered, we ended up having 14 horses qualify, or at least try to, and we... We had some very good races. Of course, we live in South Florida. We're very fortunate. I think yesterday it was 91 degrees or 90 degrees out when the races got started. And they went some good miles. The fastest one of the day was Baggage Claim, who's, had been racing at Pompano Park for trainer Jennifer Sansone. Fern Paquette Jr., who won 4 of the 5 races, he scored in a romp in 1:52.2. In fact, he went the third quarter. I think the wind was at his back in 27 seconds. So that's motoring.
Yeah, drone have a hard time keeping up with that one, wouldn't he?
Yes. That's why I'm interested in seeing what they did, because in some cases, if the wind's going against you, the horses still go a decent mile, but the drones will have problems keeping up with it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I was saying earlier today, what I'm doing now here at Sunshine Meadows, I'm actually videotaping our program so that we can use that as a promo or, you know, a pilot for, you know, broadcasting horse events. And that's what the whole International Equine Network was about, you know, back from 96 with Flying Turners at Freehold. We knew then that television was the answer to what we're doing, you know, in
exactly.
the horse industry. And so right now we're in the right spot. I met with several of the networks to provide programming, you know, for them. And that's why today, you know, we're shooting, you know, this here at Sunshine Meadows, so that we can see what we need to work on before we have that first show. And I know David did a great job on those first set of races there at Sam's place down in Olympia.
And, right, and it was the first
really good. And you were a pretty good announcer on there.
I don't think so.
Another Vince Scully.
We're not talking about that. No, not even close. But what David's doing, and that was his first time ever shooting harness racing. I mean, he's done horse shows and eventing and stuff like that, but never the harness racing, and he did a superb job. So, yeah, I'm hoping later today we're going to see a great product that eventually, within time, as hopefully things grow at the Olympia Palm Beach, is we'll be able to do those races live.
Oh yeah, that'll be fantastic, you know, and that's one of the things that I'm sitting here watching Gulfstream on the TV, and we're still racing here in Florida. And fortunate for us, we have Todd Pletcher's horses at our Palm Beach Downs farm, and he's still able to race at Gulfstream. In fact, he just won trainer of the meet in 17 out of the last 18 years.
Gulfstream, so I know. I thought they had stopped racing for the meanwhile.
They're going to race. They're going to race right on up to the Florida Derby. They just had the Florida Derby, but they're still racing. They're still racing at Tampa, and they're still racing at Oakland. And the people that are staying at Oakland and Gulfstream and here in South Florida with us, you know, it looks like that if they start racing again, they're going to come out fit and ready to roll, you know, because they've been racing.
Well, and it's fanless racing, and whether or not the harness game can get back with fanless racing, maybe the Meadowlands had talked about May 1st. If other tracks can get ready, then that would be super. Of course, they're going to need a couple weeks for qualifying. Unless they, you know, they'll invoke what we call a 60-day rule. In harness racing, normally, under normal conditions, if a horse is not raced in a satisfactory competition, in other words, it didn't go off stride or made qualifying time, within 30 days, if a horse is not competed, it has to qualify. But I think in these kind of situations, they'll probably go with at least a 60-day rule, which means, you know, if horses have qualified, then they can just come out and race. If not, they'll definitely have a couple weeks of qualifying races to make sure they have enough horses to fill a race car. That's the important thing.
Right. Look, I talked with some people at Monmouth Park this morning, and they say that they're looking to open up stabling on May the 1st. And I confirmed that through the Pollock report. And they said they're just kind of taking it day by day because they really can't project, you know, what's going to happen with this virus, you know, thing. And I also talked to Saratoga, and Saratoga said they're also waiting, you know, to see when they can open up the Oklahoma side, you know, we're going to kind of wait and see, you know, what happened there. And then, of course, Churchill, they're talking about the 28th of this month. They're going to have a firm grip on when and what they can do. But the bad thing about it is so many places like Keeneland canceled their whole meet, spring meet. We've got a lot of show horse people that have canceled. And, you know, of course, all the standard bred facilities have canceled. And everything.
Yeah, and also we want to tell fans we've got a great guest coming on soon by the name of Eric Sherry, the owner, founder, creator of OnGate.com. Plus, he's also a prominent owner, breeder, and has been for most of his life. And in fact, he's the one who first came up with the 900 numbers years ago. He had the national race line going. So we're going to be able to talk with him about the state of racing, the state of the horse sales, and how his OnGate.com has taken off by leaps and bounds and now is the prominent way to be able to sell a racehorse online. And I think that's going to be a good interview because it's getting tough. And I see some of the headlines here. I know that April 15th, there's a lot of stake races that have to be paid for to remain nominated. And you know, the Hamiltonian Society, the Grand Circuit, Meadowlands, Red Mile, they're all keeping with the April 15th. In Quebec, the 30 horses that were nominated in the first round for the $200,000 Prix de Tay, they've got to make payments. But in Ontario, the Woodbine Entertainment Group that runs Mohawk Raceway, all their stake races, they have suspended payment for 1 month. So people don't have to make the second or the non-regular nomination payment until May 15th instead of April.
Well, let me ask you about those stake payments. What about the payments that they had paid prior to this virus? You know, the stake races coming up soon.
Most of them, yes. There may be some of them that could be the first sustaining payment. So, in other words, they've already paid to go in. They may have paid as a 2-year-old and now want to, you know, get in as a 3-year-old. So those payments will have to get done.
Well, you know, that's so universal all over with the, you know, the thoroughbreds, the standardbreds, the show horse people, everybody. You know, they've all got payments and bills that are due on a timely manner. You know, and I think that's one of the biggest trouble we're going to have. You know, because a lot of the people, once you give them the money, they don't want to give it back.
Well, it's a question of that. It's also a question, you know, let's use this race in Quebec. It's for 4-year-olds only, 4-year-old pacers. But it's for the highest money earners in 2020. So some of these horses nominated haven't even raced yet, and they need to get money on their card. So it's a little bit more of a gamble. You know, if regular season was going on, they'd know how good their 4-year-olds are, and they'd say, oh, yeah, I got to make the stake payment. Here they almost have to make it just to keep eligible because the stake races are going to get switched around, moved and rescheduled, and there are probably going to be some major conflicts going on.
All right. You know what I was just thinking, Steve, about Jimmy Freight, the stake race for Jimmy Freight race that's coming up where everybody nominated. That doesn't affect them at all because got to do is move it to a different date.
No, it's not even the question. That deal, which there's news on it also, Adriano Sorello, who was on our show a month or so ago and talking about what he's done with Jimmy Freight, and it's been great, great promotions he's made, is that any 2-year-old, so if he's breeding now, that those 2-year-olds won't be racing for 2 years. They get a free race. The top 10 money winners, 2-year-olds, get a free race for $100,000. Plus, I think it's over $20,000 in breeder bonuses. And just 5 minutes ago, they announced that the Jimmy Freight stud book is full and closed. So that's fabulous news. But what we want to do right now is we want to go to our guest. And ladies and gentlemen, we want to welcome the owner of OnGate.com, the founder and a harness horse owner, Eric Sherry. Eric,
good morning.
How's it going at home?
I don't know. Well, you know, pretty much every day is the same. You know, it was staying safe, but every day is the same, which is not a bad thing. It's better than waiting for the doctor to call. So,
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, we want to know how the state of the what's going to be happening because of this virus to the horse sales, and not on gate, but to the live horse sales.
Yeah. No. Well, it's a pretty good question. You know, it's you know, September, October, November seem far away, but they're not that far. I think that, you know, there's a chance, hopefully, that it will go on as normal. But I think there's a pretty fair chance that won't be the case, especially if this virus comes back later as they're talking. But what I see, I could see something like a hybrid where the horses still go to the sale and are there. And trainers go and check it out, or owners can check them out. But the bidding might end up being done instead of in a closed arena. The bidding might be done online through something like OnGate, where people can check the horses out physically, but yet the bidding wouldn't be, because I just can't see everybody comfortable cramming into an arena these days, especially if, you know, the difference between a $25,000 horse and a $100,000 horse is one bidder. And, you know, the thought of somebody not being there that might have been on your horse, I think OnGate has proven itself in the last 19 years, that it gets critical mass. Everybody knows how to use it. It's not a new technology. And I just think that's the best way to optimize if, in fact, you know, people can't or won't go to a crowded arena.
No, in fact, the blooded horse mix sale, they canceled it, and they're talking about, you know, trying to do it up in May, and or not May sale, moving it to June, August. I'm sorry. And now they might even wait till August. So all they're doing is postponing, and there's horsemen out there I know that are looking to hopefully buy horses to race when the racing begins, and there's those wanting to sell. And I think the only opportunity to do that is on gate.
Yeah, well, right now it's very surprising. The amount of horses being sold are a normal amount. I would think that there would be a little bit of a rush of people to sell, but that's not the case. We're getting the normal amount of horses on. But even more surprisingly is that the prices they're bringing are very solid prices. They're not giveaways. You know, which shows the enthusiasm and the optimism long-term for the sport and not panic. Because I would think that prices, especially when there's no set date of opening of racing, I would think that prices would drop 10-20%. But right now, the prices are holding firm and sellers are getting their price. Any individual case could be different, but so far it's pretty, you know, it's actually very encouraging to see how solid the prices are.
No, I saw one that you had. A friend of mine owned a piece of it, A Simple Kind of Man, and they had put a $20,000 minimum on it, and I believe the horse in the last two minutes, I think, went from $30,000 to $35,000, and the hammer went down. Which was, you know, they were more than pleased with that.
Yeah, the bidders have gotten a lot more sophisticated where they wait for the last 3 to 5 minutes. It used to be people would bid early, but they realized there's no reason to bid early. It doesn't give you an advantage. And the one feature that we put on OnGate, which is a lot different than like eBay or whatever, is that the auction doesn't end until there are no more bidders. So instead of ending at a certain time, you know, let's say 1 p.m., it ends at 1 o'clock if no one's bid for 2 minutes, but it keeps going. The clock keeps starting at 2 minutes until, you know, the bidders are exhausted and there's no more bids for 2 minutes. So sometimes, even though it's supposed to end at 1 p.m., it ends at 1:20, 1:30, whenever the bidding is over.
Well, Eric, we have a lot of fans here internationally who cover all different kinds of eventing. Can you give us a quick synopsis of how you came up with OnGate.com and when it first started?
Sure. Well, basically, I like telling people we're an overnight success that took 18 years. Basically, what happened was my partner and co-founder, Maurice Kodash, and myself were running the national race line, which was 900 and 800 phone numbers for all the tracks, both thoroughbred and harness, across North America, where you can get the stretch called Complete Race or Summary. So we were doing this starting, it started back in the late 80s, and we were running it, and then one day he actually came to me and said, you know, I think this internet thing's going to work, and there really is nothing online for something like this. Why don't we give it a shot? So at the time, it was just listings, and we started this in August 2001, a few weeks before 9/11, actually. And, wow. And for about 7 or 8 years, it was just listings, because you can't really have auctions unless you have critical mass. And so we went, did it for 7 or 8 years, and then after the listings became, took a real good foothold in the industry, we added the auction feature, because at that point we get thousands of people a day on the site. And from that point on, the auctions have just grown. And then about a little over a year ago, February of last year, we sold Atlanta, and she brought $1,575,000, and we had about 10 times the volume on her as we had any other particular horse, nationally as well as internationally. And from that point on, it just exploded, and it is, you know, where it is today. And it is the only place, you know, that I know of where you really can buy standardbreds at auction online.
No, I remember back in, I think, 2010 was the first time I ever listed a horse, one of our horses, on it. And I think it took 35 minutes and three different guys called me on it. And Ron Burke, eventually, he had a guy go and check the horse out in the stall that night. And by the next day, I had the horse sold. It was fabulous. Less than 24 hours.
Oh, yeah. Basically, you know, the seller decides how long the auction's for, when to start it, when to end it. So basically, you could pick the optimum time the horses race well. Whatever it is, you could pick the optimum time to list it, unlike a fixed auction where you have to hope that the timing is right when your horse is at peak condition as well as the sale date. You pick your time, and basically in 3 to 4 days, you have your money and the horse is sold.
Right. It's just simple. And now, Scott, I know you had a couple questions you wanted to ask Eric. Fire away.
Yeah, Eric, this is Scott Miller here. I've been watching your on gate for a lot of years. It's really good. And one of the things I want to know, is it seasonal for you, or do you have a steady amount of horses every month?
It's pretty steady, but when you get to this time of year in the breeding season, we obviously have a lot of stallion breedings and shares that go through the ring. So the mix changes somewhat when the racing slows down a little bit. But so basically what happens, the amount of horses or breedings stay pretty constant, but the mix of what gets sold constantly changes depending on the season. Like in June, you'll have a lot of two-year-olds that aren't going to race at three. You know, there are a lot of different seasons that, you know, depending on what's going on in the industry, but the actual number of listings stays pretty constant.
Yeah. Now, do you just do standardbreds or do you do all breeds?
Okay, so on this site, it's strictly standardbreds because that is our expertise. Because even though it's an online business, it's really, that's where the horses get sold. But both Maurice and myself are always on the phone dealing with people. One thing I don't like is when you go to anything that's online and you can never speak to a live person, they keep clicking contact us, and you can't find anybody. With us, it's just the opposite. We're very available to speak to anybody, to appraise horses, tell them what they think the best strategy is, you know, what a thing to bring and things like that. But so we don't really have that expertise in thoroughbred. A few years back, we had a site called handride.com, which we promoted on Daily Racing. We had a partnership with Daily Racing Form. The problem is that we had nobody that really understood, didn't have the relationships, the connections, or really understood the thoroughbred business. So even though we have it programmed, if the right partner came along, we'd consider it, but I'm not going to put out a shoddy or second-rate product. And without the knowledge
right.
of the industry, I just won't go down that road.
Right. I've got a project that I'm working on right now with some top of the line thoroughbred farms. where they want to sell like 7 or 8 horses that are in training on their farms in Lexington and California. Mm-hmm. And they can't leave the farm. And what I told them, I said, if they could contact you, you know, to explain to them, you know, the horses they have and their top quality horses.
We're always available. I mean, we do things some white label where we can do things for them or people like them, either a one-off or an ongoing project where we're invisible to the public, but we would be the engine and the back end to make sure it runs seamlessly and smoothly.
Right. Well, one of my friends that I was talking to in California, he liked the idea, and what I sold him on was the fact that he's not going to be a part of the 2,200 horses at Keeneland or Fasig Tipton or whatever. It's all his show. I said, out there, you can, you know, we'll video your horses. You can see them in training, the whole 9 yards. You can put on a big barbecue and have a real nice, auction right at their farm. But I told him, I said, if they could contact you at OnGate, you might be able to help them with it.
Absolutely. That would not be wrong.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Let me.
I thank you very much, Gary. You're a good help for the standard bread industry. And I see you quite often, you know, here in South Florida, and we need more guys like you, you know, on taking outside the box.
Before we let you go, Eric, I've known Eric. We've been friends, and actually, I've worked with him for over 30 years. And Eric, you've done some great things. You've come up with some superb betting gimmicks over the years that have. I think the Survivor Series was something that you came up with. But I want to ask you about this coronavirus. I know you've got an opinion about it.
Well, basically. I think that, you know, it obviously has to be taken seriously, but I think that, like all things with government, I think there was a much better hybrid approach on what we should have done as a country. I think it should have been taken care, seriously much earlier. But I also think that once somebody tests negative or has already had it and is now over it, slowly, we should be able to let people get back into the world and society instead of doing all or nothing, both stopping and starting. I just think that there's a much more gradual, we should have stopped it severely sooner. But I also think that as people are cleared and as we could develop tests, those people, they don't do any damage if they're already, either they don't have it or they already had it and they're not contagious. I just think that we should get our society and our economy back rolling again on a much more controlled, slower basis versus all or nothing both ways. That's my opinion.
Well, there we go. Eric, we want to thank you very much for coming on the show.
No, thank you.
We
anytime.
Always like, and we'll have you back on as hopefully things get better.
Always
you
available.
Take care.
Have a great day. All right, have a great day.
Be safe.
All right, bye. Bye.
So now we're back to racing.
That all gave something else, man, Steve. I tell you, $1.5 million for our million, one for Atlanta. That's good. That's a good auction.
Yeah, it showed what a Hamiltonian willing filly is worth. But we have to let people know that the original owners of the horse, they were the ones that eventually ended up buying it back. And of course, you know, she ended up racing and becoming and being the age trotting mare of the year, won the Dan Patch Award for
the
second year in a row.
But this goes to show you the quality he has on that site.
Yes, that horse went for a lot of money, but he's sold a number of other horses, $300,000-$500,000. It's really surprising. But as we were talking before, We're hopeful that the tracks will be coming back. And one of them that has made an announcement, which I don't know if it's premature or not, but Jeff Gorell at the Meadowlands is saying that if
coronavirus apparently is continuing on its course, that they may be able to open by May 1st. And that's, of course, contingent on a lot of things happening. But at least there's a few tracks out there that are ready to get going right away if things are allowed.
There must be some validity to that statement, because Monmouth Park has said the same thing. They're shooting for May 1st, so maybe they know something we don't know.
No, I think, Scott, the July 4th weekend, I think, is when Monmouth is now scheduled to open.
Right, but their backside, they're going to open on May 1st.
Exactly. They're going to let horsemen come in there, and it could very well be fanless racing. And all the tracks that have casinos attached to them, they've got that situation in that they may not be able to have live racing, even if it's fanless, until the casinos are able to open. And that could take a while.
Right. Yeah, I didn't think about that one. You know, that we're just talking about sales and everything. The Mid-Atlantic 2-year-old in training sale in Maryland, in Timonium, Maryland, rescheduled that for June 24th and 26th. And, you know, they're hoping that, you know, that this will come around. And I guess basically what I'm trying to say is that so far, everything that I've seen from all of our horse people and my connections, everybody's trying to stay prepared for when they do open those floodgates for them to go. You know, they don't want to be behind the eight ball, you know, and trying to catch up.
No, I don't think anybody does. And I think once tracks are able to get going, those first tracks are going to have plenty of horses going. But once all the tracks have postponed or stopped their meets and come back again, then I think we're going to end up having a horse shortage again.
You might be right. And I tell you what, there's a lot of people that are getting out of the business right now, but there's also a lot of people that are getting into the business because they see, you know, some good bargains here that they might be able to, you know, grab a hold of and you know, 6 months from now be a whole different ballgame.
No, absolutely. And, of course, we're talking about, you know, tracks throughout all of North America that are hopefully going to be able to race in the next month or two, and we'll try and get life back to some normal sense, if we can make normal sense after what's happened.
Right. Well, you know, like with the show horse industry, for example, one of the big problems that they're having is they have to, you know, kind of start to figure out where they're going to go to with the horses, because like in July, a lot of the horses will stay will be in Lexington or California. And you know, they had shows that led up to those. So now you got to start in the middle of July at the height of the season and try to make something out of it to the end of the year. And it's going to be tough on them.
No, you're right. You're right. And I guess what we have to look at now is, you know, what's the situation going on and how these racetracks or racinos or the Horsemen's Association are doing everything they can to help the grooms and trainers who are, like you say, trapped on the farm, and help them provide food and supplies and groceries and normal staples and everything they can. In fact, we got to give a shout out to the Dio Valente Farms and owners Tom Pontone and Michael Galata, because they have donated a breeding to all their stallions: Lazarus, Trixton, Liz Mara, Six Pack, you know, Jeff Gorell, the Okie Swanstead and the Swanstead Stable, other people. They're all donating these breedings to help pay and buy supplies and stuff to help all these people. And guess what? The auction of those four stallions, which is just beginning now, is right on ongate.com.
There you
and
go.
Eric Cherry Eric Cherry said that the winning bidders will make their checks out directly to the SBOA of New Jersey Benevolent Fund, which I think that's great from everyone,
It's very, very appreciated, and it just shows that, you know, how people want to help each other in this industry.
Oh, you're exactly right. And you know, the good thing about it is with all the horses that we deal with, our feed companies have come out here and they've explained to the owners and trainers that they're going to stay on a regular schedule of delivery for them with the hay and everything, because, you know, the virus, you know, it hasn't tainted the feed or the hay or anything of that nature so far that we know of. And so they're still, you know, manufacturing and they're still delivering. And that's a little bit of a relief. And the grooms still have a job, you know, here because they have to be fed and taken care of, you know. And I think horsemen are pulling together. And not a horseman's going to go without in this business, because we'll take care of them one way, shape, or form.
No, you're absolutely right. And despite the virus and everything else, there is another big announcement that came out of Canada. The Canadian Harness Racing Hall of Fame has announced their inductees for 2020.
Who are they?
Well, representing the class of 220 are driver Paul McNinnell, trainer Ben Wallace, the mayor Amoris Angus, and two great, great horses. One, of course, is McWicked, and the other one that's going into the Hall of Fame is the great Rambling Willie.
Oh, Rambling Willie, what a horse.
And somewhere or someone has my book, because I was very fortunate to see Rambling Willie race quite often. And then when Bob Farrington's wife wrote the book, The Horse That God Loved, and how she had tithed 10% of the horse's earnings to her local church, made national news. And the horse, when he went to race, Rambling Willie was so good-natured. I remember, because I was with him at the Christiana Mall near Brandywine Raceway, where they were selling the books, and I helped hold Rambling Willie's hoof and put it on the ink pad, and then would stamp the front, the inside page of the book with his hoof print.
Oh man, what a good promotion for a book and an autograph.
Oh, and I can't find the book because I think I loaned it to a friend and he snatched it on me. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, I should have never gave it to the guy. But so be it. But he was a great, great horse. And it was a different era of time, and I'm glad he's going into the Canadian Hall of Fame. He did race up there quite a bit. I'm just sorry that it took so long for him to get in. Whereas the other horse, McWicked, who's, my God, what do you call it, the richest pacing stallion ever, and he just went into retirement, and bang, he goes into the Florida Harness Racing Hall of Fame. Now he's in the Canadian Horse of Fame. He's with the 2019 or 2018 Harness Horse of the Year. I mean, there's not much. I mean, the only one who made more money was the Iron Horse, foiled again.
Yeah. And you know what, Steve? I'm sitting here looking at that hat you brought me from McWicked.
Oh, yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
I think it's $5.1 million the horse made.
That's right, yeah. I wore that around Casey's barn. She goes, who do you know?
Yeah.
I got my connections.
No, that's good. But that's all good.
You know, Steve, I think that, you know, a lot of our listeners, if they go to, like, Harness Link, and that keeps them updated on all this virus and all the track openings and, you know, the blood horse for thoroughbreds and USEF and FEI for the show horses. You know, it's a daily thing. It changes every day, you know. And
right.
I just don't see anybody sitting down really making plans, you know, over the next 30 days, just kind of wait and see what happens.
No, you're absolutely right.
You know, that's the tough part. And, you know, even like on the RV side of the equestrian industry, I was surprised they limited a lot of the parks you know, to where you can't go to. And they had a massive flood of people taking RVs and going out. And it was unbelievable. And they said, fortunately, they've got the social, distancing. And said it wasn't that bad, but they shut down the swimming and everything else. You know, and that was the tough part.
No. I just saw a release about the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, and they just conducted two useful webinars regarding the federal programs contained in the CARES Act. And that's designed to provide relief to small businesses during the coronavirus 19 outbreak. And these webinar shows are focused on the race industry. So it gives attention to potential trainers and owners that they can get loans to keep going, and maybe interest-free loans, but people need to check that out. And if you go to the NTRA website, I think you'll be able to see those webinars, and that's something important for owners and trainers in the business.
Well, you're right. You know, and that's one of the good things about the thoroughbred industry, you know, and about the standard bred industry and just the equine industry as a whole. With the internet the way it is today, you can go out and if you got a question, you can get online and you can pretty much get it answered and taken care of. You know,
that's
and
right.
I think if they go to NTRA, you know, they'll have it. You know, that'll help them a lot.
I agree 100%, and I'm glad to see things like that. And it was actually the SOA, the Standardbred Owners Association of New York for harness racing, who posted about the NRA webinars, and they want to get the word out because if it's good with the for thoroughbreds, it's the same for harness, quarter horses, show horses. That there's an availability to get special loans because of the virus to help make things help to pay your bills.
Well, exactly. Now, Steve, let me ask you, what harness tracks are running now? Because I sit here in the day afternoons and watch Gulfstream and you know Oakland that type of thing.
There are
I see a lot
only,
of harness racing in the mornings.
There's two tracks in Australia that are racing, and the tracks in Sweden are racing. In fact, they have adjusted their post time, which is always, you know, ended up being a little late because they're 5-6 hours ahead of us. They're actually racing earlier so that the people in North America can watch and wager on them. But right now, Sweden and the two tracks in Australia are the only harness racing tracks that we know of in the world that are racing.
That are racing, yeah. Well, you know, just about the whole virus situation, thank God, you know, we don't have it close to us here yet, at our facility. You know, that's the great thing about being where we're at. We're shut off from the outside world. You know, and it makes it kind of comforting to know that, you know, we're pretty safe here. But not saying we still practice all the rules and regulations, you know, and we're very fortunate, very fortunate.
Well, now what else do we have lining up? I mean, I know next week we're going to you talk about possibly going with live video.
We're doing the video. I've made contact with a lot of the organizations like FEI and USEF and, you know, the thoroughbred industry and all. And basically where we're at now is they need their product to be promoted. And so what we're going to do here at IEN is we're going to act as a distribution point for them. What we'll do is every week we'll have, like, say, for example, Quest for Equine Gold. We'll talk with somebody at FEI or USEF or the Olympic Committee, and we will provide a video of what they're doing. We'll be doing their mission statement for them. And then periodically we'll check in for updates, you know, that type of thing. We'll check in with companies like Churchill Downs with their marketing department. You know, what do they want to tell us about, you know, Churchill and who they are and what they are? And we're going to start doing a lot of virtual tours. There's a farm coming up next week that I will announce. We're going to do a virtual tour of that farm. And let me tell you, Steve, it is something else. It makes it feel like you're right there, you know. And so now if we start, you know, publicizing and pushing the product, you know, of all the industry, I think it'll be a good thing.
Well, that's what we like to hear, because we need all the positive news we can get, because things just, you know, they're just not I don't see them getting better. And now the news out of Australia that their crop, their expected fall crop has dipped down below 3,000 for the country for just standard bread.
That's not good.
You know, that represents the lowest figure since the 1960s.
Right. Well, you know, we were talking with Eric about how steady and constant he's been for the last 18 years. You know, with the last call concept that I have, you know, if you ask somebody to talk about themselves, that's the greatest thing in the world. And so what I did is I went to several of the thoroughbred farms and asked them. I said, you know, let's talk about your horses and who you're selling and how many you're selling. And some of the farms had, you know, 50 or 60 in, you know, in the sale. And then the average was about 8 to 10. And so I went to those people that had 8 to 10, and I said, listen, let's talk about your farm, who you are, who these horses are, where they've been, and what they've done, and make it all about you. And I said, then we'll, you know, take it to an online auction and, you know, see what happens. And I cited OnGate as you know, very successful, you know, with the standard bred. Steve, I got 100%. Okay, from all the people that I talked to, because now it's about them. You know, it's about their farm, their horses, and they've got 30 days to talk about this horse and push the horse, you know, to the end of the sale. And then some of them came up and said, you know, how about if we, you know, do 2 weeks instead of 30 days? I said, you can do it as long as you want, you know, whether it's a 3-day notice or 14 or 30. And I think this is going to be the new wave of horse sales. You're not a part of the 2,000 horses that are at you know, Fasig, Tipton, and Keeneland. It's all about you, and there's nobody else around you.
That's right. And what bothers me about this news from Australia with the mare's number dropping so drastically is that here in the United States in harness racing, the Australian and New Zealand horses have been flown in every week, sometimes 10, 15, 20 at a time. And they're dominating in the racing. So now looking to the future, if you only have so many horses around there, and if the United States population continues to drop, which is going to happen, people are, because of this coronavirus that the racetracks have stopped, owners are going to start, you know, selling or downsizing breeding farms too, just to be able to cut costs and you know, maintain high quality. But there's going to be a lot less horses in the years to come to race.
You know, and when you say that then you have to restructure your stakes programs. You have to, you know, your racing cards. You know, it makes it tough, you know, to not have enough horses to fill a race.
Right, because at times then you'd say, okay, well, less races, more purses, but that's not the case. You need full fields and gray purses, and that's what's going to attract people. Virus has set the racing industry backwards. I can't say years backwards, because the more we go back, the better racing was then.
Yeah. You know, I'm getting kind of excited about, you know, looking towards the fall, like, say, to the Kentucky Derby. I got a friend and a relative in Kentucky there. They are planning a heck of a derby for you. And, you know, they got a big barn, and they're going to, put a big screen TV in there and have a barbecue. And I think this is a trend that's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of people, you know, that want to watch TV, watch IEN, you know, and NBC Sports, to see all this and stay in the comfort and the confines of their home.
Right. I just feel bad because the Derby is the biggest probably attended race in the world, and whether or not they're going to be able to get 100,000 people to come out for the races that day. But Scott, we haven't talked about this, and I haven't heard any news yet. Can you tell us how did the Preakness and Belmont fall in line with the Derby? Have they agreed with NBC and everyone?
Well, that's what I was looking at today. You know, they were talking about it, and they're trying to figure it out. And, you know, instead of them planning, you know, like say, okay, 2 weeks after, you know, after the Derby, like, you know, the 19th of May for the Preakness and then 3 weeks for the Belmont, they answered the question. They said, we're going to wait and see. We're going to give it another 30 days and see, you know, what we can do. Now, the problem is the television aspect of it and the marketing aspect of it. You're getting into football. You're getting into, you know, baseball, the World Series. You know, you're getting into NASCAR pretty heavy. You know, there's so many things that are up for grabs, and it all depends on the television networks. Where can they fit them in, and who's going to not get televised?
Well, that's just a wait and see, like everything else at this point.
Yeah, you're right. And you know what? When you go to your sponsors, and let's say we'll go to Dodge, for example, and you tell Dodge, okay, Dodge, I've got the Derby on the 5th of September, and I've got you know, Miami and Florida playing football. Which do you want? You know, and it makes it tough on the marketing aspect of it.
I agree with you. I agree. And but they'll figure something out, I'm sure. It's just that I get worried that when the Triple Crown races get pushed into the fall, I mean, that means, you know, by the end of September will be the Preakness, and then we're looking at mid-October for the Belmont. I mean, it could be beautiful, and right. It could snow.
And then the Breeders' Cup would be 2 weeks mm-hmm. after the Belmont if they go on that pattern. And then the other thing is you know, everybody would like to win the Derby, but at September 5th, you're looking at the close, if they were open, of Saratoga and the Travers. You're looking at, you know, at the Haskell, at the Monmouth. You know, now all of a sudden you got all these big grade one stake races jammed up together.
Right. I know. Don't know. I'm sure they're all working on it diligently, but who knows what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like we were talking about the show horse end of it, a lot of our show horse people, you know, that I talked to, you know, they had scheduled flights to go to France, you know, to do the European tour. The
Correct.
Global Champions Tour, which travels all around the world, you know, just came to a screeching halt. You know, the same with polo. You know, they're not traveling to Spain and to Costa Rica and, you know, to England like they normally would, you know, and it makes it tough.
No, it does. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that, you know, kind of concerned me is the people that, you know, are the concessionaires, you know, the people that are working in the shop selling the clothes, you know, from everybody. And like I told you last week, I had those Derby glasses. They had a massive rush on all their products there at Caulfield's in Louisville.
Have you gotten your glasses yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got them. I got them. And, it, you know, I told them I've got a standing order. I've got the Preakness and the Belmont glasses coming too. So I'll have a set of, you know, the original date, and then I'll have a set when they decide what dates they're going to race for the second one, you know, group level. So, you know, that's kind of exciting, you know, to it. And the big shirt that they're selling now, it's got on there the Derby date for May, and it's got an X on it, and then it's got September 5th. And so if they don't race on September 5th, there will be a third shirt with an X on it, and then the next date. So those are the shirts that are really going to be valuable.
No, I totally understand that. And good. Did you get a shirt too?
No, I didn't. I didn't. Omar, the tent maker, was out of town that weekend. Ah. I'm a big guy, and I had to put my order in. Steve, I think if we all practice safe, hygiene, safe distancing, do the things that we need to do, sanitizing and wearing our mask, I think, we should be in pretty good shape. How is it on your end of the county? I know you live south of me. So how's it on your end? Is everybody surviving?
Well, people, of course, yes, they're surviving. I mean, the only person that we actually can see and talk to is my son, who actually, when he comes to the house to visit, he has to come around the back of the house and sit on one of the lawn chairs, 6-7 feet away from us. So everyone's practicing as best they can. I saw a husband-wife team, and they were talking with someone else saying how, well, we only had one set of gloves and one mask. So he got the mask, and I got the gloves, and they're out shopping. But I know we're getting close to the end of the show, and I do have to talk about a little bit about harness racing. And apparently yesterday, one of the great, great people in harness racing, a gentleman by the name of John Brown, and everyone in the harness racing industry knew him as Brownie. And he worked the race office at the Saratoga, and he helped at Pompano. He wintered down here all the time, and he passed away. Not from the coronavirus, but sadly, he passed away. And I know there are hundreds of people in the business who have known Brownie over the years and were very sorry for his family on his passing, because he was one of a kind, and we'll miss him greatly.
Well, that's sad to hear. How's the situation in New York and New Jersey? We had several harness families that suffered quite a bit of a loss with losing multiple family members.
Yeah, and there's been other people have gotten the virus. There was one couple who happened to have been with at Yonkers Raceway in the race office, and he got infected, and he got his wife infected, and they were both in the hospital. He was in for 8 days. She was in for 10 days. They almost went on ventilators, but then when, were able to kick it and come back, and we're happy for that. But the Fusco family, they were devastated with the death of three of 11 brothers and sisters, and then the mother also passed. So four just in that family alone. And we also want to send out best wishes to the leading driver at Yonkers Raceway, Jason Bartlett, who became ill with the virus right away weeks ago, and he's just getting to the point of recovery. And this was a young man, totally fit shape, and for 2.5-3 weeks, I mean, he was home. I don't know if he was ever hospitalized or not, but this disease took a major toll on him, and I think it all depends on each person and their body system of how they're going to react to it. And I know for a fact that at the end of January already, that people thought they were having the flu and stuff, and but thankfully got over it, and may very well have had the virus.
Oh, you're exactly right. And I think, Steve, if everybody keeps the faith, practices, what we're told to do, and just have common sense, I think, it'll go a long way as far as, staying healthy. So I hope you and your family stay healthy. I hope all of our crew at BBF stays healthy. And remember, in this time of being locked up, go to bbsradio.com. That'll get you through a lot of days.
That's right. They have superb programming on most everything out there. They're also part of iHeartRadio, so you can get it that way. You know, if you can get iHeart, it's a great station. You can look up literally anything you want to know about, and they're going to have it. But it's been another good show, and it's always great being with you. And thanks out again to Eric Cherry coming to talk to us about OnGate.com. Folks, go check out the site. You got a question on anything, give Eric or Maurice a call.
You got it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to our people at BBS, and we'll see you next week, and we'll have a complete schedule of our video lineup. Have a good weekend.